Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Text and voicemail line 331-979-1369. Anything comes up this weekend, anything from any of the shows that we talked about, any discussion that we had, we want to hear from you. So 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. Hit us up there. Hit us up on social media. Make sure you're interacting with the show wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show. Matt, happy Friday to you. I decided to put up a poll for us on Zach LaVine. I feel like with draft talk going on, and I feel like we've touched on Zach LaVine's contract talk multiple times before, so I decided to put up a poll because the Kings seem like a team that might be interested. There was a report by Casey Johnson said that was a team that seemed to be consistent of that. So I figured, hell, let's see what Bulls fans think of this. So I put up a poll that said the Kings have $17 million in cap room this summer. If the Kings were to offer Zach LaVine 4 years at $68 million, that's 17 per year, would you match as the Bulls? And as the poll was going on, a couple hundred votes in, we were at about a 60-40 split. I go to bed last night and I wake up this morning and the poll's got over 1,000 votes on it. And we're at a 50-50 split.
What's going on, Jordan? Bulls Nation? Yeah, I thought that was pretty freaking hilarious. I mean, talk about a fan base that is pretty evidently split on exactly how much people think Zach LaVine is worth and how badly people want to keep him in Chicago as part of this rebuild. You know, you picked 17 mil as a average annual over 4 years because that's kind of something that the Kings could throw at him right now. And I think it's the reason it's so split is it's because it's kind of right in that sweet spot in the middle of what people are afraid the Bulls might have to pay him and what Bulls fans would see as a good, cheap bargain deal to get LaVine on a multi-year contract. You know, because people that still want to believe in LaVine, who's young, athletic, offensively gifted, want to keep him around for the rebuild, but don't want to pay him much more than, say, 14, maybe 15 mil a year. And there are obviously plenty of people in Bulls Nation who are saying 20 million and more. I mean, I know we got this kid in the Jimmy Butler trade, but he's not worth that, and the Bulls might actually be smart to let him walk. So it's crazy that the split, that the poll ended in a exact 50-50 split, but I think it's because 17 mil is right on that fringe of whether or not people think that that's overpaying Zach LaVine.
I don't know. I don't know if it's because Zach LaVine only played 25 games for the Bulls. If the Bulls fans feel like Lowry and Chris Dunn are enough to say, you know what, forget paying him $17 million over the next 2, 3, 4 years and just walk away from that deal. I don't know. I feel like Zach LaVine is still a huge question mark as far as what he could potentially be. 25 games for me isn't enough of a sample size to really evaluate whether or not this guy's going to be an all-star. And the Bulls front office probably feels the same exact way. So for Bulls fans to knock him because he looked inconsistent last year, like, you've got to take into account that this is the first time the guy's played basketball in over a year. And so the inconsistency in minutes, too, with the minutes restriction that the Bulls had him on, had him not playing back-to-back nights. There was all these weird rules that the Bulls had Zach LaVine on the last two, 3 months of the season. And then we didn't really even see a whole lot of him in the month of March. So for me, I feel like he's still a huge unknown, and for fans to just say, well, he's a terrible inconsistent shooter, he can't dribble, his defense is terrible, like, yeah, those are kind of tangible things, but if you're just evaluating that off of what he did with the Bulls, I think that's kind of a mistake. 25 games and then only 12 games with Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen together, I think is a terrible sample size for what you're getting. My biggest question to you, Matt, is if the Bulls let Zach LaVine walk to another team this summer, how big of a backlash do you think this fan base is going to give this front office?
A pretty big one. I mean, there are some in this fan base that there's no pleasing them. Whatever Gar and John Paxson decide to do about Zach LaVine, there is some contingent of ride or die fire Gar Paxers that whatever the outcome is, they will find a way to criticize it. And that's the part of the fan base that I'm getting real damn sick of right now. That being said, the Bulls, I mean, the front office can screw this up. Obviously, let's get that out in the open. They can screw this up if they decide to overpay him. Because this whole talk about Sacramento might be interested in offering LaVine a big-time deal, I don't know how much Sacramento is really interested in doing that. Obviously, it's a non-zero level of interest, but there are a few other restricted free agents that they might value more than Zach LaVine. And outside of that, based on him coming off the 25-game season, coming off an ACL, what we saw from him in his small sample size in the 17-18 season, I just don't buy this idea that the Bulls are going to have to match some gross, close-to-max-level contract, and the Bulls front office, criticize them as you may, is at least smart enough to know that assuming LaVine doesn't come to them with some gigantic offer that they have to match, or at least have to consider matching, they hold the cards. They hold the cards at the negotiating table. If Zach LaVine does want to stay in Chicago and he wants a multi-year deal, the Bulls have the leverage because this is still a summer when not a lot of money is being thrown around and Zach LaVine doesn't look like a guy who earned himself a max offer sheet. So, I mean, that's basically where I am right now. I think the Bulls front office can do a good thing and do a good job if they sign LaVine to a 3 or 4, I would prefer 3, but a 3 or 4 year deal where you're averaging somewhere in the mid-teens in millions per year. I don't want them going 20 or above. If they have to consider matching some offer where it's paying him 20 plus million per season and they do decide to let him walk, yeah, it looks bad because he was a part of the Jimmy Butler trade, but I'd rather keep that cap space in 2019 and 2020 than commit to a guy that you're really not that sure about right now.
Yeah, I'm with you, but my biggest question too, and maybe it comes in two ways. One is, who do you replace Zach LaVine with if you let him walk to another team? And the other is, to me, the Kings don't make a whole lot of sense. If you look at what the Kings were last year, their two best players in Bogdanovich and in Hield both play the shooting guard position. So unless the Kings think that they can move either Hield or Bogdanovich to the three and have them play the wing, or if in some weird world they feel like Zach LaVine can play the wing, like, it doesn't make sense to me. I know the Kings will king, but still, even for them to sign a guy to a ton of money over a multi-year deal when your two best players in the roster came at the same position doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And I know they're star hungry and they just want anybody in there just to try and be competitive at this point. So that to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So even with the Kings being connected, I don't know how big of an offer they're going to give Zach LaVine. If they wanted to spend all of their cap space in $17 million, that's what we're kind of looking at, probably a four-year $70 million deal. Another thing is, too, okay, say the Bulls let Zach LaVine walk somewhere else and they have a ton of this cap space. Who do you fill in for next year? Who plays in that role next year? Who do the Bulls sign? Like, are you okay with the Bulls potentially giving $10 to $12 million to Rodney Hood, or to another one-year deal to Lance Stephenson, or signing Marcus Smart to a multi-year deal.
I mean, to me, that's a waste of money, man.
You're
trying to set yourself up for 2019 and 2020, and those, you know, the Bulls are not in a situation where they're trying to be a competitive team where you want to, like, just do plug-and-play kind of contracts with mid-level veterans. That to me, that's nonsensical. Even if they do let LaVine walk, it's not like you have to go out and find some other option to fill his shoes in free agency. You just drafted Chandler Hutchison, who played plenty of shooting guard at Boise State. There you go, Jeremy from Idaho. You have Denzel Valentine. You're probably going to bring back David Nwaba, but like, you have options for Fred Hoiberg's lineup and his rotation. You don't need to go out and just spend dumb money on Rodney Hood or Marcus Smart just to do it. To me, if the Bulls decide to be prudent and not match some gross hypothetical LaVine offer, then continue on your path and your planned trajectory, Gar, of being in great cap situation next summer and the summer after that. And what's the point of bringing in some veteran on a free agent deal who's gonna, what, make your draft pick somewhere in the teens as opposed to in the top 10? What is the point of that?
No, I agree with you. And it's just kind of playing to the other side of the fan base who might want them to replace with him with somebody this season. And I think if they don't bring Zach LaVine back, that's a commitment for another year of saying, yeah, we're going to be bad. We're probably going to be somewhere in the lottery next year. But really, we'll add another good pick next season, and then we can top that by playing around in free agency in 2019 or 2020. It's going to be interesting because really the three names that headline 2019's free agency, and then obviously the guys that are going to sign one-year deals this summer will be a factor next year, but Butler and Kyrie, I think, are the two guys that are headlining 2019's free agency. So to me, I don't care if the Bulls let Zach LaVine walk, but like you had said, I don't want them to sign Rodney Hood to a multi-year deal or Marcus Smart or any of these other guys. If you're going to spend the money and you want to invest in a guy, I'm fine with Zach LaVine at $15 to $18 million a year. And hell, if they want to go to a shorter-term deal and it's a two-year deal at $20 million and tell Zach LaVine, here, we're paying you a little bit more. It's going to be on a shorter-term deal. If you prove to us that you can potentially be an all-star, then we can renegotiate in 2020. So to me, that would be the only way I could see it pushing towards $20 million. But if there's a team out there that's willing to give him a four-year, $80 million deal, I would be hard-pressed to say that I would be upset if the Bulls let him walk. Because $20 million a year for the next 4 years ties your hands a little bit, especially if he doesn't turn out to be good.
Well,
so
yeah,
this is the game that you got to play. It's tough.
It's a risk. And let's also say that there is a possibility that if the Bulls do, for whatever reason, whether it's Sacramento or some other team, so somebody gives LaVine an offer something like 4 years, 80 mil, and the Bulls have to consider matching it, and they decide that they do want to match it. There is a risk that all of a sudden you're overpaying Zach LaVine, a guy who didn't show you much last season, is an injury risk, and doesn't seem like he really fits in Fred Hoiberg's offense right now. That can improve. Zach LaVine can improve. And still, at just 23 years of age, the guy, before the ACL, was like a 20 points per game scorer who has all this amazing athletic upside. The defense is still a giant eyesore, but guess what? There are a lot of offensively gifted players in this league that get paid a lot of money to play no defense. That's just the way the NBA is. There is a possibility out there, other than the Bulls overpay Zach LaVine, that Zach LaVine comes back, has a monster 2018-19 season, and all of a sudden, on a four-year deal, when he's getting 20 mil or a shade over it with his annual raises in 2021, looks like an absolute steal of a contract. That possibility exists too. I'm not saying it's the more likely possibility. I'm just saying it could, like, this, that, and that's what we're saying here. It's like, it's really dicey with this LaVine situation, because he could turn out to be just another a guy who's not really helping the rebuild all that much. He could turn out to be an all-star caliber player. And whether or not the Bulls and the contract they come to terms with him ends up being a steal or an overpay, we just don't know right now, and that's the scary part.
I'm with you, too, and I'm glad you brought it up, too, because you can't talk about the negative in Zach LaVine's game without going to the flip side and saying what he could potentially be. I think it's a disservice, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you just sit here and talk about all the negatives as a Bulls fan, because a year ago, we were talking about the potential upside of Zach LaVine and what happens if he does return from the ACL and he turns it on. So I look at the age factor of Zach LaVine, too. He's younger than Chris Dunn is right now. He's younger than Bobby Portis. Coming into this, Zach LaVine is what, 22 years old? He's going to be 22?
23.
23 years old. So looking at his age, too, as well, and having, what, 4 years of experience already in the NBA, granted one was hurt, I still play that into a factor, too. So I think it's the back and forth that the Bulls are going to have to play, and this is a huge decision, and it's a huge decision as far as where they want to take this rebuild and how much they want to really commit to that young core. I think they're going to get a lot of initial backlash because trading Jimmy Butler for Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and Lauri Markkanen, and Zach LaVine was known as the number one commodity in that draft. We can say a year later now that maybe Lauri Markkanen was or Chris Dunn was, but a year before that, Zach LaVine was the number one part of that deal. So I can see some backlash if they let the guy walk that they traded Jimmy Butler for, but it maybe what won't be so unwarranted if he does get a ridiculous contract from $20+ million a year for 4 years.
And just to finish this conversation, I want to touch on something that I also talked about in a column I wrote for LockedOnBulls.com earlier this week. You say Zach LaVine, biggest part of that deal. I believe that Chris Dunn was actually the piece that the Bulls wanted most. Obviously, they were really excited about swapping those draft picks and getting into the higher part of the lottery to take Markkanen. And they were optimistic about Zach LaVine as a young, athletic, offensively gifted player in this league. But I think back to the 2016 draft when the Bulls so greatly coveted Chris Dunn and nearly traded Jimmy Butler twice to two different teams to get him. Nearly traded him to Boston at 3, nearly traded him to Timberwolves at 5. That's how badly the Bulls liked and wanted Chris Dunn. So a year later, the Bulls find themselves in the same situation, in the same decision-making process of, do we want to trade Jimmy and start over? Chris Dunn is the guy they had their eyes on, going back to 2016. And that's why when you hear people like Nick Friedell say things like, yeah, it's not exactly all on board within the Bulls organization right now how they feel about keeping Zach LaVine around, Bulls fans think that sounds crazy because he was the centerpiece of that deal. I think Chris Dunn was the centerpiece of that deal. And I think Bulls fans, whether or not they agree with that, look at Chris Dunn right now and say, he might actually look like a better player than Zach LaVine right now.
I can't argue with that. The logic makes sense. And everything that we knew about him 2 years ago when he was in the draft and how the Bulls potentially wanted to move up to get him, I understand that and I get that. So I can see that, maybe not from the initial trade when they made it a year ago. I think my thought process was for sure Zach LaVine was the number one. But now taking a year to really look at that, I think you're probably right. And I can definitely side with the argument that you're making about Chris Dunn. And I know there were some people that were saying that you're crazy that Zach LaVine or Lauri Markkanen were a part of that. But sure, you didn't know Lauri Markkanen was going to be this good in his rookie year. So for fans to say that, I think is a little bit hindsighted. But I think you're right. I think if we're talking about the Bulls front office and what they wanted, Chris Dunn was probably the most coveted of the three. I don't know. I'm still, it's a big question mark with Zach LaVine or not. And look, I'm not down on Zach LaVine's game either. I told you I was going to die on that hill, and I still think he can be a phenomenal basketball player in this league. This just comes at a shitty time. It really does. 25 games and 12 games with Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen isn't a huge sample size, and the Bulls knew that. The Bulls knew that when they traded for him that they were going to have to make this decision this summer. So I think they're going to play hardball, and they're going to wait it out and see if any other team is legitimately interested in LaVine. Ultimately, I still think that LaVine's going to be back in a Bulls uniform.
I do, too. I do, too. And I think most of it has to do with the fact that I don't see another team giving him a legitimate big-time multi-year offer that they actually want to sign him on.
We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're going to wrap up and head you guys into the weekend. We're going to take a few questions, maybe a voicemail as well. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. All All right, back here on Locked On Bulls, Matt. Just want to run through a couple things real quick. I know Bobby Portis was on Jay Hood's podcast earlier this week, as well as Zach Lowe discussed the Bulls kind of in, I wouldn't say in detail, but they had an honest conversation about what they felt like this rebuild was and how they have done in their first year, and got more positive praise than I think Bulls fans maybe have given them credit for as well. So talk me through both of these. Anything worthwhile from the Bobby Portis interview?
No, it was a pretty straightforward interview. The one thing that I thought was interesting is that Jay Hood said, Bobby, looking at this young, talented roster that you guys have, assuming everybody's healthy and comes back, am I crazy to say that you guys are going to be a playoff team next year? And Bobby said, hell no. He said, you're not crazy. Like, Bobby thinks the Bulls are making the playoffs next season. So that was my biggest takeaway from that. And then the Zach Lowe podcast, the Lowe Post, which if you don't listen to that and you're an avid NBA fan, I don't know what the hell you're doing. It's amazing stuff. He's got great guests all the time. He was talking with Kevin Arnovitz basically about how people tend to overlook the fact that this Bulls front office, for all the trash they get and all of the people that like to poke fun at them, we're really the only team in the league, the only front office in the league to look at that huge cap spike in 2016 and say, nah, you know what? We're not going to sign any of these crazy 4 and 5 year max deals to these mid-tier kind of players just because we can all of a sudden with this new humongous cap spike. The cap's not going to continue spiking. It's going to flatten out in a couple of years. And we can set ourselves up right now, because we're not legitimate title contenders right now, to be one of the teams in better cap flexibility situations in 2019 and 2020 when LeBron's reign is probably close to coming to an end. Who knows if the Warriors are still going to be together dominating everything. When there might be an opportunity for a shift in power in the NBA, we're going to put ourselves in position to be big players in free agency. We're going to have room to sign two max-level guys. And it was just an enlightening conversation, because sometimes I think Bulls fans forget that. For all of the things that you want to joke about, Jordan Bell this, Marquise Teague over Draymond Green that, I'm sorry, sometimes this front office does intelligent things. And passing in the summer of 2016 on the long-term deals, yeah, signing Dwayne Wade was stupid. Rondo was stupid, but they were short-term deals. They were smart. They were strict with themselves. And I was glad to see Zach Lowe, with someone with his reach nationally, having that kind of conversation about the Bulls front office that gets a lot of flack.
Yeah, Matt, I would agree too. I think Zach Lowe giving them a little bit of credit, I think, gives you an idea. And I've talked about before where I felt at times over the last 2 years, the national scale media has been kind of out of touch with the Bulls and exactly what fans feel like here in Chicago. But giving them credit for some of the stuff that they've done, especially last year, just like from Jimmy Butler and then beyond that, I think they do deserve a little bit more credit. I know we've been getting some flack on this week's episodes just for giving them a little bit of credit and kind of walking Bulls fans through exactly what they did last year and, you know, putting the positives and the negatives into two different scales. Like, the positives definitely outweigh the negative moves that the Bulls made. The bad thing is that the history gives Bulls fans more of, it's more like putting gasoline on a fire than trying to put it out. And with the Bulls doing this and making some of the moves that they did and lining themselves up to be at 2019 and 2020 big players, I think my only worry here is that the history of swinging and missing on free agents comes back to hurt the Bulls even more. And I don't know if players around the league feel like that there's been some type of change in culture and if there's all of a sudden a new look at what the Chicago Bulls are. And I don't know what players are thinking in terms of that way, but as far as history tells us, it's a big and bold move to push all your chips in the table into free agency where you haven't really been successful in your tenure of grabbing all-star type of players to come in and really change the way this franchise is going. So if I had one concern, it's doing that exactly that, and is pushing all your chips into the middle of the table.
Yeah, and I think that's the fair place to stop the praise and say, well, hang on. Yes, the Bulls front office did make the wise choice in 2016, and have set themselves up to potentially be successful as some of the biggest money-throwing free agent players in a year and in 2 years. That is true. However, this front office regime, going all the way back to when Pax took over in 2003, has not successfully landed their prime free agent target when they have big buckets of money to swing around. Really, you have to go back to Ben Wallace, which was more than 10 years ago now, to the last time that they got the guy they wanted. A top tier, one of the biggest free agent names in the free agent class that summer. The Bulls had their target. They went after their target. They got their target. Ben Wallace. That was more than 10 years ago. 2010, the summer of LeBron, swing and missed on all of them. Boozer was the consolation prize. A few years back, swung and missed on Melo. Pau Gasol was the consolation prize. That one specifically, thank God. Thank God they swung and missed on Melo. Can you imagine if they had to pay Melo close to $30 million next season?
Oh, my God.
And Pau was good while he was here for a couple of years. So, but that is the concern, is that, okay, this front office has not had tremendous success, especially recently, going after and landing those big-name free agents. So that's the next part of the puzzle. They set themselves up to be successful in that regard. Can they finally get it done?
I think the one thing I can say is, as far as like 2010 goes, and I know we don't talk about that much anymore just because of the history of it, but the one thing I can give the Bulls credit for in 2010, and this is kind of what they're doing, shaping up for 2019 and 2020, is having the ability right away to sign two max contracts. I think people forget that it's difficult to put yourself in a position where you can sign two guys to max deals. And you look at what the Lakers are trying to do right now. They're scrambling because they're trying to find a deal that's going to work and take on this money. And they gave Luol Deng a bad contract. And like, they're in a position where they're squirming around trying to figure out how they're going to be able to put two max contracts on the table, not only to get maybe Kawhi, but also get LeBron there as well. So the one thing I can give them credit for in 2010 is being present and having the ability to go and get a guy like LeBron and Dwayne Wade right at the time. So I think that's a big play too as well, is setting yourself up to be present and have the ability to take on that money and have that flexibility. Now we're talking about the Bulls here, so giving them that credit and then swinging and missing multiple times also has to play a factor into that as well. But I think going into 2019 and being set up to maybe potentially bring on two max contracts, I think is huge for the Bulls. And even if you slide it all the way to 2020 and if they don't find anything there, I think also the pitch about them being sort of taking the Rockets blueprint in the way that they felt like, you know, they were adding assets, but they weren't adding stars until there was a chance for them to go out and get James Harden and then to sign Chris Paul too as well. So I think taking the blueprint of what the Rockets are doing kind of makes more sense than anything else as far as tanking goes for the Bulls. The only thing, other question I've got for you on this is, any possibility the Bulls think about bringing in Butler and Kyrie Irving next season, like as a tandem? Because I know there's been rumors about them two for a long time wanting to play together and them two being free agents next year. And obviously it's a big question with Kyrie and being gone from the Boston Celtics, but any chance that they throw out the idea of maybe bringing Butler back and pairing him alongside Kyrie Irving?
Wow, it's a little early in the day for smoking crack, Jordan. No, I don't think so. No.
You're smoking crack. Stop.
I had to ask. Did you have to ask?
All right, fine. Well, yeah, no, there's my answer. No, I think Jimmy and the Bulls are done.
I do too.
Even after he moved on, he said, you know, at some point maybe to finish my career there, to go back. Charles Oakley came back and had like a one random year in Chicago. Scottie Pippen, a lot of Bulls fans forget that happened like 2003, 2004. Pip, old man Pip, came back and played a season before retiring. Like, maybe that happens with Butler when he's, you know, pushing retirement. But no, I don't see them bringing Jimmy back in because he was a headache for them. They were a headache for him. I think they're fine that they're apart. And I don't think, although he's going to be one of the biggest free agent names in 2019, I don't think they're going to target him.
I'm curious what players are going to say. And like, you know, these free agents that are going to be out here the next 2 years, who they talk to and guys that have former Bulls that have played here and have had to play under management like Gar Foreman and John Paxson go. I'm curious as to what other players are going to say if top free agents are considering Chicago, what they'll say about the Bulls and how that might affect them as far as their pitch goes. And to me, they've kind of pissed off a lot more players than they've supported, and guys that have been supportive of this franchise over the last, I don't know, 5 years or so. So that makes me a little nervous too, as far as what these connections and what these guys in the league are going to say to each other, and how players are going to react to playing for the Bulls, and what advice they'll give to guys that maybe are considering Chicago as an option in 2019 or 2020.
It's a legitimate concern. I mean, it's not at the forefront. Obviously, players talk, and players aren't going to go commit to a team and living in a city for a team that maybe they feel like they can be competitors and playoff contenders, but they don't like the people that they work for. That's certainly a factor. But I think some of that might be overblown as far as, like, oh, so many players have come through Chicago and hated the front office and didn't get along and talk trash about them to the rest of the players in the league. I think some of that's overblown.
Just to finish up, want to take a couple questions. Remember, you can leave us your voicemails or your texts at 331-979-1369. You can always hit us up on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. All right, Matt, we've got a couple text messages to kind of wrap up the show, and we've got one voicemail as well. So running through these pretty quickly here. This is from the 773. It says, did notice that Wendell Carter Jr. and Noah Vonleh have similar college numbers. Though Carter seems to be a better passing big and a better at blocking, what do you guys think and what do you guys take from this? And he said, I'm excited for Carter this season and his effort once the season starts, and I may even watch them this summer in summer league. So what do you take from that, Carter and Noah Vonleh's numbers being similar?
Not much. I mean, one of them is a guy the Bulls got in a trade deadline day flyer and played a few minutes, but really nothing concrete. And one of them is a guy that they just picked with their own lottery pick last week, 7th overall in the draft. The Bulls have plans for Wendell Carter Jr. They didn't have plans for Noah Vonleh after giving him a quick look. The fact that their college numbers are similar, to me, that means next to nothing. I mean, it really does. It means next to nothing. You can look at people's college stats and then say, well, look what they did in the NBA. Wow, they exploded. Or look at this college stud. He got to the NBA and did nothing. There's examples in all directions across the board. To me, I mean, maybe they end up having similar games at the NBA level if Vonleh finds a team and sticks around, which I think he will. I think he's talented enough to play in this league. But I don't take much from the comparison from their college stats. I don't.
Look, Noah Vonleh was the number one option and really the only option on Indiana's team. Yeah, they had Yogi Ferrell, and they had some other problems going on in that 2013-2014 season when Vonleh played. He was the number one option, and honestly, as far as big men and athletic big men and really sort of that versatile big man that you're looking at, he was the only guy in the Big Ten that right at that point could play like that. They also played him at the five and basically ran the offense through Noah Vonleh. So that's why you see kind of similar numbers with him. With Carter, it's different. It's completely on the flip side. He was used as more of the second or the third option on offense. It was asked to play a role where Noah Vonleh was really more given the opportunity to showcase his offensive skills. So I think that says and speaks something to Carter's numbers and also speaks something to Vonleh's numbers. Obviously, Vonleh hasn't turned out to be the offensive power that maybe he was at Indiana at times. But I think you're right. He'll probably stick around the league. But I don't draw any comparisons to college numbers and being specific. I could probably come up with 10 comps that are guys that didn't turn out to be in the league and ended up being superstar, and then another guy that ended up being a superstar in this league. So I wouldn't read too much into it.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to our next question. Can you guys break down what a 1-1 contract is? I could Google it, but I value your insight more. Well, thank you for suggesting that Jordan and I are more reliable source of information than Google. That is rather humbling. I don't know if it's accurate, but
that's exactly what I needed going into the weekend. So thank you from the 312.
The 1-1 here, I don't think this person is asking about the two-way contract, which the Bulls used this past season on Archie Diacono and Antonio Blakeney, and have Blakeney on the second year of that coming in. I think this texter is asking about the 1-1 contracts for usually bigger-named stars making big money, and it is essentially a two-year deal with a player option in the second year. That's all it is. So there's a lot of talk about these 1-1 deals coming into this free agency summer, and this is probably why you're asking this question, because given the tight financial belts that a lot of teams are under, especially a lot of playoff teams, contenders that want to add another star this summer, they're looking at probably a lot of offers where a player is going to sign 1 year with the second year option so that those players can re-enter free agency again in 2019 when more teams will have money and they'll have more options at their disposal. So names like Paul George, who we heard is opting out and is still debating Lakers staying in OKC, whatever it may be. People are talking about PG signing a 1-in-1 year deal. Could be, we heard earlier this morning, officially LeBron is opting out of his $36.5 million player option to stay in Cleveland. Doesn't mean he's leaving Cleveland. It means he's just giving himself as many options as possible. You might see LeBron sign a 1-in-1 deal this summer as well. That's what those are, and it's all about giving star players the flexibility to change their mind and change their team after one season.
Yep, you summed it up pretty much perfectly. And I think it gives flexibility to the players too. As far as guys like LeBron, he was signing 1-in-1s because he wanted to make the most amount of money. So every time he opts out, he could probably make a little bit more money depending on where the cap goes. And now that the cap's flattened out, I'm curious to see where that goes. But yeah, it's flexibility not only for the players, but also for the team as well. So looking at that.
Don't think the Bulls are signing any of those this summer, if that was also a part of your question. Not those players, but 1-in-1 contracts.
Yes.
I think they're going to look to sign LaVine to a multi-year deal. Same thing with David Nwaba. And it's not like Nwaba is the kind of person who would be demanding a player option in a 1-in-1 deal.
What's going on with his citizens? This is DVS again. I try to keep my questions interesting for you guys, so here comes another one. What is the ugliest Bulls, my hand bending this way, jump shot? We've got the Bill Cartwright, both hands straight upright jump shot, and the Joakim Noah whirling tornado jump shot. Those are the three ugliest I can think of off the top of my head. But which one do you guys think is the ugliest Bulls jump shot of all time? Take it easy.
All right, thanks to our caller, DVS. He always got creative questions for us, and this is the third one he sent in, and probably one of the most creative ones. And the ugliest shot by a Bulls player, I probably could think of right off the top of my head, Carlos Boozer having one of the ugliest shots I've ever seen, but hell.
It's weird. Like, I don't know if it was ugly with that weird, like, release point from behind his head.
Oh, it's just, but he's, it like, was putting like, up a put, like a shot put.
But it was impossible to block, because, yeah, I mean, like, those shots would scrape the United Center ceiling. And he knocked that Boozer, like, 15 to 17-foot jumper. He knocked him down like clockwork. Ugly as hell, but efficient.
Very, very true. So you look at that. You brought up Joakim Noah. I think that is a spot on as far as an ugly-ass shot goes.
Dude, the tornado, man. That's one of the best NBA gifts ever, is when he's at the free throw line and DeMarcus Cousins is, like, looking at him after he's taken a free throw, and he, like, makes that gesture with his hands, you know, Boogie. He's like, how do you shoot like that, man? Like, utter confusion on his face. Yeah, Joe's shot is ooh. But when he would take those, obviously teams would be like, yeah, shoot from there, Joe, I dare you. And then he would knock him down, and he would just, you know, strut back to play his defense all hyped up. When those nights happened, when Joe was knocking down that tornado 12 to 15 foot jumper, you're like, all right, this Bulls team is going places. Definitely Cartwright. Cartwright was ugly. Another Bull that was only here for a couple years, but definitely part of that bench mob, Ronnie Brewer. Ronnie Brewer has a weird-ass looking jump shot.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about him.
It's like elbows out, like both elbows out, and his supporting hand is like covering half the basketball. Really weird looking.
All I say is thank God we don't have Lonzo Ball's ugly ass shot on our team, and Markel Fultz, who's also lost his jumper too and looks disgusting.
Kid Gilchrist. That dude's shot is so weird. He like brings his elbow all the way in. Like, his shooting elbow, as opposed to, you know, they tell you, keep your elbow straight when you're making that jump shot. He brings his shooting elbow all the way in, so it's, like, kind of running parallel at an angle with his supporting left hand's elbow and forearm. Like, weirdest shot I've ever seen.
Real quick, while we're talking about jump shots, did you see that video of Mikal Bridges' shot circling social media earlier this week.
I did see that. Looked really, really weird and chopped up and awkward.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about that. And maybe that's just, I don't know if that's the way he shot before, but it looked like he's got like a weird hitch and like, I don't know.
Yeah, which made me think that maybe it was some drill that they were having him do where they were trying to get him to like break up the different phases of, all right, step one, step two, step three, release point, whatever, whatever, because it looked so uncomfortably hitchy that I was thinking that maybe it was on purpose as some kind of drill to work on his form. But if that was just his shot, that... Ugh.
And I don't know what changed from playing, you know, a couple months ago to now, but yeah, that didn't look good. I would be surprised if that's his actual shot, and then you got to question whether or not something's wrong with him or who changed his shot to make it look like that, but... He was knocking him down in that video, but nobody was guarding him. But then again, you get into a real game and you start shooting like that, you're getting it stuffed back in your face every single time.
Yeah.
To wrap up our list, like our list of bad shots.
I got to throw Sean Marion in there too.
Oh, yeah.
Sean Marion. And he shoots like he's about to give a chest pass, but instead he takes it from his chest and just chucks it up with two hands, like right in front of his face. So weird.
So with that, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday for a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.